The if onlys, if only I hadn't done it that way. Or whose fault was it? That's a favorite. You know, let's look back and look at all the faults and all the things that we can do to assign blame. And you assign blame, you get all the blame. What I tell people to do is take all the things in your life that are wrong and that aren't working and assign blame to them. You know, I'm fat, who's at fault? Sara Lee, all right, or somebody like that. And I'm broke, and that's the Dow Jones fault, and or it's the Ayatollah's fault, or it's somebody else's fault, and you assign blame to everyone. And now look at your life and see if it's any different, see if it's improved in any way. And you find that blame or fault-finding doesn't do anything except make the victimizer one more step ahead of you in the game. All right, let's look at a few strategies here for stopping yourself from being victimized by references to the past. When someone starts telling you things that have always been a certain way and we've always done things this way, you can respond very nicely with, would you like to know if I care about what you're telling me right now? Or, do you think that what you're telling me right now is relevant? Do you believe that how we did it last Thursday or last year is really the issue here? Just, it's like you confront it right away. And as soon as you get that, you disarm the potential victimizer. Try to eliminate the should-haves from your own life and from your own conversations, your own vocabulary. Try to get that word, what you should have or would have or could have, should or would or could have, out of your life and understand that all of that is just a reference to keep you from being effective today. And it's just nothing but a blame assigner. And so don't use it yourself, and you'll find yourself flagging it real fast when other people use it on you as well. If someone asks you why you did something, give a very brief one- or two-sentence response, and that's it. And don't keep going on and on and over-explaining it, because the more you over-explain, the more you're going to find yourself victimized by them. Don't be afraid to admit that you're wrong when you do something, or just simply say you're right. You've made a very good point, and I will learn from that, and I won't do it in the future. This is one of the great things that my wife and I are able to do with each other over and over again. Instead of having these arguments that are endless, it's like you stop yourself right in the middle, and you say, you know, you're right. You made a good point. I was a jerk. I did behave stupidly, and I'm going to see if I don't do that. It stops. I mean, I've seen my wife have her mouth fall almost onto the floor when I've just turned around and stopped being pushy about it and admitted, yeah, you made a good point. And usually the person doing the most talking is the one that's wrong. Try to learn from the past rather than repeating it and making references to it all the time. And silently forgive all of the people in your life who you feel have victimized you in some way. That's such an important lesson to learn. Forgiveness. That all of those people who behaved towards you in the past that you might still be hanging on today, the ex-spouse, the child that hasn't called, the person who borrowed money from you who hasn't repaid it, the parent or the grandparent who ignored you or abused you in some way, that forgiveness is a very, very powerful tool. All of the spiritual masters who've ever come our way, including, of course, Christ on the cross when someone threw a spear and a soldier threw a spear into him, and his first words are, forgive them, for he knows not what he does. That's such an important concept to get, that the reason that Christ was saying he knows not what he does is because he was really saying that when you throw a spear into me, you throw a spear into yourself, because we're all connected, we're all one. And the same thing is true for all the people who have thrown spears into you, if you will, or have harmed you in some way. It's like a snake bite. If a snake comes along and bites you, no one ever died from a snake bite. The bite is just a bite. It's just a wound. And you can't unbite someone. A snake can't unbite you. What kills you is the venom that is pouring through your system and destroying you. And the metaphor there is that what is destructive to you in this whole business of not being victimized by what is over is the venom, which is your thoughts that you carry around. The behavior is done. You can't undo it. You can't change it. You can't unabuse someone. You can't not abandon them now if you already did. You can't repay the money that you never repaid. I mean, that is all done. That's all. You didn't do it. That's over with. But what you can do now is decide not to carry that around, not to let their behavior destroy you. Mark Twain put it this way. He said, forgiveness is the fragrance that the violet sheds on the heel that has crushed it. And you have to know how to do that. Because once you let it go and get rid of it, and I can remember someone was trying to sue me at one time over some silly little thing, and I was angry and filled with rage about it and going to really show them that they couldn't do it. And once I let it go, and once I sent forgiveness out there and sent love where I was sending hate before, Well, the suit was dropped, and all of the things that I worried about so much just, you know, melted away. And the same thing will happen with so much of the victimizing that you do. Get forgiveness into your heart, and you'll find yourself a whole lot better off and not being victimized by all of that stuff that happened years and years and years ago that isn't worth hanging on to anyway. Pulling your own strings. Another common way that people pull your strings instead of you pulling them yourself is this whole business of what I call the comparison trap. In a world of individuals, comparison is a senseless activity. You are unique in all the world. No one can get behind your eyeballs and be you. No one can experience you. The only thing that anyone can experience you with is their mind. Everything else is a step removed. Their thoughts are what they have to experience you with. And so, too, do you experience everyone else with your thoughts. Otherwise, you are experiencing existential aloneness. Existential aloneness is really very different than loneliness. You see, loneliness is experienced when you don't like the person you're alone with. But aloneness is just in the way of things. You can be in a crowd at the largest stadium in the world, surrounded by 100,000 screaming people, and you experience it uniquely alone. No one can get behind your eyeballs and inside your ears and experience it and hear it the way you hear it. Your red that you see, the color red, is your red, and it can't be mine. You can't see it the way I see it. And this is a very important mental concept to get to avoid being victimized by other people, because as you'll see in just a moment, there are people out there who would compare you all the time and use this as a way of controlling and manipulating and getting you to behave in the way that they want you to behave. When you understand your existential aloneness, when you know that you are unique and special in all the world, then you stop the inclination to compare yourself to other people. You stop constantly telling yourself that you have to be like others. You stop constantly striving to accomplish and achieve at the same level that other people have achieved at. You get past this whole need to keep up with the Joneses, because that's a way of putting yourself into a victim trap that it's almost impossible to get out of. You see, even if you're in a race with somebody else, if you're looking over your shoulder to see how you're doing in comparison to how the other person is doing, then what you're really doing at that moment is saying that you are in charge of how I am feeling right now. However you perform, and my comparison to you is what makes me happy or not happy, and you've turned the strings over to somebody else. This is a really big area for most people. Most people find themselves unable to isolate themselves from comparing themselves from other people. Children grow up in a world where we hear things about peer pressure all the time, that there's a lot of peer pressure, that everybody has to fit in, and if you don't fit in, then you're isolated, and if you're isolated, then you're a reject, and if you're a reject, then you're an outcast, and it all goes on to all of these horrible labels that we place on people. We have to raise children to understand that there's no peer pressure in the world. That there are people out there who are saying, do things the way I do them, and then there are individuals who say, wait, I've got a mind of my own. You want your children to have a mind of their own. You too want to have a mind of your own. You want to think for yourself. You don't want to have somebody telling you constantly that you have to do it because everybody else does it. If you do things the way everybody else does, what have you got to offer? I mean, if you're just like everybody else, you have nothing to offer. You're just one more sheep bleeding away. You don't want to be that way. You want to understand that, yes, there are standards and there are norms within a society, and that we accept those as living standards, but I don't compare myself to other people. I don't have to go out into the world and look at other people to determine how I'm doing in my life. That's got to be an inner thing. That's something that has to come from within. And yet there are people out there, there's many of them, who are going to constantly compare you and use all kinds of techniques and strategies to get you to conform by saying, don't you see that other people are doing that? But the first thing you have to do before you can even eliminate other people doing it to you is to get rid of it yourself. Get rid of this whole notion that I have to be somebody who other people accept or like in order for me to feel good. And you don't want your children to be believing that, well, everybody else does drugs, so, you know, that's why I did it. Or everybody else is jumping off the cliff, so that's why I jumped. Or everybody else is drinking and driving, so that's why I do it. Or everybody else is not wearing any clothes to school, so that's why I go naked. I mean, it's an absurdity. And if you're constantly comparing them to others, then don't be surprised when they do it themselves. Raise them to understand that there are peers out there who will try to pressure you. But if you buy into it, then you are the victim. That you have to decide for yourself what is morally proper and improper, and what works and doesn't work, and what is effective and ineffective, and not some invisible standard called peer pressure that is the biggest cop-out I've ever heard of. Let's look at some of the victim traps in this comparison business. Here's the first one. Why aren't you more like your brother? Or why aren't you more like your sister? Or why aren't you more like Sally down the street? You find when somebody else is telling you to look at yourself and ask you the question, why aren't you like the other husbands or the other wives or the other workers and so on, that's something that you have to send a flag up for. And my response when anybody ever does that to me is, if I'm just like everybody else, what do I have to offer? I'm not here to be like the guy down the street. That isn't what I'm here for. I have my own purpose. He has his. He's on his path. I'm on mine. And I'm not here to emulate him. And you stop it. You put a stop to it right there. Another common one is nobody else is complaining. So you might have a reason to complain about some injustice. But since nobody else is doing it, then the victimizer will constantly be reminding you, well, look around you. Nobody else is saying anything, so why are you? What's wrong with you? As if everybody else's behavior ought to be determining your own. Margaret Mead had a wonderful line in one of her monographs back in 1934. She said, don't ever think for a minute that a small group of people who are committed to social change can't make a difference. In fact, it's the only thing that ever has. A small group, an individual, who has an idea, who doesn't want to be just like everybody else, can really make the whole world change. In fact, that's how all change comes about. It starts with an individual or a small group of people. Here's a great one. What if everybody in the world behaved like you do? What if everybody was like, and it's like, there's the comparison, comparing you to everybody else in the world, and then why aren't you fitting in? Or you should be satisfied with what you have. Everybody else is satisfied. Or don't make such a scene. You're embarrassing me now around other people. It's like the whole inclination to look at what other people are saying or thinking or doing is a reason for you to quietly go away and be my victim. Another one that's a favorite of mine that you see in our culture a lot is, this is what God wants me to do. A lot of people use God as a reason for why they're doing what they're doing, as if God talks to them very specifically. You know, and you hear some of the serial murderers using the same kind of analogy. You know, God told me to do it. Be very careful of anyone who believes that God specifically talks only to them and to no one else, and uses that as a reason why you should be doing what they decide you should do. So how do you overcome this? What kind of things can you do to not be the victim of someone comparing you and controlling you through those kinds of comparisons? First and foremost, when you're in any confrontation where someone is using references to other people and expecting you to go along, you have to remember that his comparisons have nothing to do with you. He would say that to anyone. It just happens to be that you're the person who's there. Refuse to be upset, and you'll be well on the way to avoiding these often insulting efforts at victimization. You have to know that your emotional reaction to those things is in you. It's not in them, it's in you. And they come from how you process it. If somebody starts comparing me to somebody else, I laugh inside. There was a time when I would get angry, but I'm way past that now. I don't need to do that. I see it for what it is, I know what they're trying to do, and I refuse to be compared to anyone in my life. And I do that in my mind. And as a result of doing that in my mind, I then can carry it out in my actions. When someone's giving you an argument, like in a store when you're taking something back and telling you, and this happens all the time, well, they'll start telling you about, well, just last week I had a customer where we had the very same thing, and sure, there they go off on this long, windy story, and there you are, getting ready to put on your little victim hat. And you respond with that very, very nicely with, do you think I care about the customer you had last week? Or why would I want to hear about how you dealt with other people? I'm concerned about this here and now. You keep it focused where it belongs. Remember that the victimizer is doing this to get you to go along with their program. So you have to put a halt to it. Practice using sentences that begin with the word you rather than I. Very, very helpful technique. One of the most helpful things that I can ever give to you. You want me to feel that last week's customer was an important thing to bring up. So you feel, if you start the sentence with you, you're putting the focus where it belongs, right back there. If you put it on I, you get into a defensive posture where you have to explain yourself. If someone is speaking very loudly and angrily towards you, your response is, you're really getting upset as you're telling me this. Or you really want me to listen to five stories about what happened last month when I want to talk about what happened here today. You, this is what you're doing. Instead of, I don't want to hear all this, and then you get yourself all mad and all worked up and so on, and you're in that defensive posture. Another good strategy is to label what the person is doing. You just simply say you're upset and you're comparing me with someone else. And that's an upfront statement. The moment that you find yourself dealing with a clerk or someone who is not going to go along with what you want or isn't going to help you out or is a middleman to keep you from reaching someone who has authority, the minute that you sense it, the second that that happens, you stop talking to that person. You say, thank you very much, I appreciate your time. And you walk away, and now you regroup, and you start over. And you say, who is the person that has authority in here? Who is truly the person that can make this happen for me? Once you do that, you'll find yourself going into the... You see, what happens is if you go up through the chain of command, that each higher level, whether it's a refund policy or it's a bank loan or whatever it may be, each higher level has got to defend the person below him. He can't overrule that person. That's what they're there for. That's why they have that job. So if you start out above them, you start out going right to the person who can make a decision, even if it's a little more cumbersome to do that, you want to make that effort, because the moment that you have gotten to two or three people who have now been defended, when they get to the top person, they simply have to defend all of the people that he's got out there underneath him. So avoid all of those people in the beginning and tell the person, I've come directly to you because I understand that you're the decision maker here. And then you make your case for whatever it is that you want. Albert Einstein once wrote these words. He said, great spirits have always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds. The truly great people, the ones who are going to really make a big impact in the world, the ones who are making a difference in the world, are always resisted by people who want to stay mediocre and who want to keep things average and want to keep things the way they've always been. Be one of the great spirits and know that the violent opposition that you're encountering is just other people's efforts to keep you at the status quo. If you refuse to go there and use some of these strategies and refuse to compare yourself and refuse to look back and deal effectively from a position of self-esteem now, you won't be victimized. Another major area of being victimized, if you really want to pull your own strings, you have to learn how to be quietly effective. And get this, you will never be understood. The greatest understanding you can have is that you don't understand. And spending your life and your energy and your relationships on trying to always be understood and have someone else agree with you and understand you is one sure way to make sure that you're going to be a victim for the duration of that relationship. You don't have to prove yourself. You don't have to allow yourself to be in a position where someone else is demanding to be understood by you. There's some things that are very simple, some very simple little clues that I use in my own life and in pulling your own strings that I'd like to share here with you. Under the heading of being quietly effective and knowing you're never going to be understood. First is that shrugging is a virtue. If you could just learn the art of the shrug. I like Ayn Rand's title, Atlas Shrugged. Atlas holding up the whole world and just shrugs. And the whole idea of not having to be in a position to defend yourself or to be understood or somebody's demanding something from you. And when you can just sort of shrug your shoulders and say, well, I don't understand. I just don't understand, and that's okay. My wife and I do this to each other all the time. I mean, she does the craziest things in the world, and vice versa. I mean, she thinks what I do is crazy, too. I mean, she believes in what she's doing and believes that that's the way a house has to be run, for example. She makes the beds first thing in the morning. I mean, that to her is just her way. I have lived under the philosophy that it's not any healthier psychologically to get into a made bed than it is to get into an unmade bed. But she makes the bed. I don't understand somebody getting out of bed in the morning and making the bed. But I don't have to understand. It's not necessary for me to understand. I don't have to get into a you're wrong and I'm right attitude toward it. It's just a simple shrug. If you want to make the bed, that's terrific. I'll even help you if you want to. Just let it go. You don't have to. I don't have to understand that. She puts the glasses in the cupboard with the lips going down. I put them facing up. I don't understand that. How could any put them, buddy, face them down? But that's the way she does things, and that's perfectly all right. And you know something? Life is full of those little things. Everywhere you go, you're going to encounter people who do things their own way. And that's really what makes the world go round, that uniqueness, that specialness in people. So if you just shrug at it and stop telling yourself that I have to be right and I have to make somebody else wrong in all of my interactions with them, just shrug. Just shrug. Quietly shrug your shoulders and say, they have a right. They're on their own path. They have a right to do what they want to do. And you don't have to be understood. And when you get into that mindset of not needing to be understood all the time, then you're not going to be explaining yourself and having somebody else explain themselves to you over and over again, endlessly. Being offended is a choice to be a victim. Did you ever think how silly it is to go around being offended? There are people who turn on the radio and they hear somebody speaking in a certain tone or saying a word that they don't like, and they have a whole vocabulary of words that they're offended by. And if somebody says one of them, right away they go off into a dither. Well, it's just like letting somebody else's behavior decide how you're going to be emotionally. I mean, you can be the kind of person who goes down the street and your emotions are being pulled by everybody else, your strings are being yanked by everybody else in the street, depending on what words they choose, what symbols come out of their mouth. This person says hell, that one says damn, this one says uh-oh, this one says caca, that one says poo-poo, this one says wee-wee, whatever it maybe, and you're offended, or whatever synonyms you want to use for all of those functions. For what? It's like allowing yourself the right to process somebody else's behavior for what it is. It's their behavior. It's not yours. If you don't like what somebody is saying on the radio, tune the dial someplace else. If you don't like the way somebody else is dressing, turn your eyes someplace else. Don't feast your eyes on it. If someone else wants to hear rock music that you think is disgusting, then don't listen to it. That's what this whole thing is about. That's what the First Amendment to the Constitution is about. That's what free speech is about. That's what free expression of as a human being is about. That there's no code that is going to fit everyone. And choosing not to be offended is to choose not to be a victim. People speak the way they speak. I don't like some of the language that I see in the films. I don't let my children go and see some of the film. I don't like the violence that is on the screen. Rather than being offended by it and being all upset about it and getting myself worked up and being a victim to the people who choose to display violence on the screens, I simply don't go to those movies. I don't have anything to do with them. And I don't miss them, and I happen to believe that it's part of the gratuitous violence that we find throughout the culture. But I'm doing what I can to eliminate that. But being offended by it, being upset by it, it's as silly as being offended by starvation. Starvation is a part of what the universe is about. And so is my desire to change it and to improve it. That's just as important. And that's what I go with. I go with what I'm for rather than what I'm against. Everything that you're against weakens you. Everything that you're for empowers you. So the question is, do you want to be empowered or do you want to be weakened? Everything you fight, you'll be weaker for the effort. Everything that you're for will empower you. When they asked Mother Teresa if she would march against the war in Vietnam in 1967, she said, no, I won't. She said, but if you have a march for peace, I'll be there. And there's a big difference. All of the people in the world who are against terrorists, if they suddenly were for peace and worked for peace and devoted their life for peace, there wouldn't be any terrorists left. But all of us who are against terrorists and want to fight them become more warriors, more need to have more hostility and so on in the world. It's very important to know for yourself that whenever you're offended by the behavior or the actions of somebody else, as morally right as you may find yourself to be and as reprehensible as you may find their behavior to be, it still is letting somebody else pull your strings. It is your emotions clanging up or clanging down, depending upon what somebody else outside of you does. And you just simply don't have to give them that kind of power. And when you do, and you find yourself offended and all upset and your blood pressure up and your ulcer growing, know that it's because you have given that kind of power to them, not because of what the other people have done. Also, it's important to, if you want to be quietly effective and know that other people aren't going to understand you all the time, is to stop analyzing your relationship to death. I've said over and over again that relationships that work because there is no work. Who wants to go to work all day and go home and get in the car and say, okay, now I've been working all day, now I gotta go home and work tonight. I gotta work on my relationship. And now it's like the rest of the night until midnight, you're working on your relationship, then you dream about it, and your whole life becomes this enormous job. So you see, there's two ways to look at virtually anything. One is the violent way, and one is the peaceful way. That's the yin and the yang of the universe. The violent way is to analyze something. When you take something and analyze it, you tear it apart. You break it open. You crush it. You dissect it. You pull it all apart and see what's in it. So that's what people do with a relationship. Analyzing is a very violent intellectual act, if you've never thought of that. And it's a victimizing stance. It's violent intellectually in that it tears apart. Now, the opposite of analyzing something is synthesizing, that is, bringing together, looking at what holds it together. What are the similarities? What is it that we have in common here? And how much do we enjoy each other? What are we for? If you're in a relationship and you understand that what you think about is what expands, or as you think, so shall you be, is true, and you're thinking about what is wrong or what is missing in your partner, then for you, your experience of them will be what is missing or what is wrong, because what you think about is what expands. So what you want to do is get focused in your relationships on what you are for. What do you like about that person? And observe that. Unless you want the negativity to expand, then focus your mind on that. Because whatever your mind is on will be your experience of them. You can't get behind your eyeballs and be that person and be your spouse. You only have your mind to experience your spouse with. And if your mind is on what's wrong, then that's what you'll be experiencing. If your mind is on what's missing, on what you don't like, then that will be your experience. And that's what analyzing a relationship almost always is about. You do this, and I don't like that, and this is wrong, and then that becomes your experience on it. When I look at my wife after being gone for on a business trip or whatever, I look at the divineness that is in back of her form. I look at the thoughts, the beauty that is in the invisible part of her, and I'm just grateful that she's there, rather than thinking about all the things that she's done that I don't like or that we argued about or whatever. I don't want that to continue to expand. And so I don't want to analyze our relationship. I just want to love her and be loved for what we are. Because, as Robert Frost said, you love the things you love for what they are. Not for what they ought to be or what they used to be or what they can do for you, but for what they are. When you fall in love with someone, you fall in love with what they are. You don't look in their eyes and say, you know, you're really beautiful, but if only your eyes were a different color, then I could like you so much better. Or if only you were a little taller or a little shorter or a little, your hair were a little this or that. You don't do that. You just go, you're just so gaga in love because you are loving what they are. And then you get into a relationship and mature the relationship, and now your mature relationship is, you know, you should have done this, and if only you did that, and that's what destroys it. What you want to do is maintain that, I love you for what you are, and we don't have to analyze it. When you're falling in love, you don't analyze anything. You just simply enjoy being with each other. Arguing isn't worth defending. I know that people do it. I do it sometimes. I see it as a weakness when I do it. It is not worth defending. Usually the person doing the most talking in the argument is the one who's wrong, who is trying to overstate their case. And I just was reminded of a cartoon that was in The New Yorker, where a fellow said, I'll tell you why I'm yelling. Yelling, I'll tell you why I'm yelling. I'm yelling because I'm wrong. And it's that kind of admission that you finally realize right in the middle of it that I'm raising my voice because I don't know what else to do. And I've just realized that I've been... arguing isn't worth defending. Arguing really is saying, you know, if only you were more like me, then I could like you much better. That's behind almost every argument that we have. If only you could process the world the way I process it, we wouldn't be having any of these problems. But that isn't what you fall in love with. You don't want someone who's exactly like you. That's redundant. I mean, who needs another you? You already got one of those. What do you need two of them for? You fall in love with what's missing in you, and that's usually the opposite. And so usually the great loves are very much opposites, and that's what you're attracted to. And you'll find that working over and over again. If you hear people saying, oh, we have everything in common, you know, and we like to do everything together and we share the same, you know, then you can be sure that relationship isn't going to last long. Because who needs somebody else to be exactly like you are already? Now you got it tridundant, if there's such a word. So one of the big victimizing traps that we're talking about here is in this whole business about being quietly effective is, I simply do not understand you. And then you buying into that and saying, well, then I guess my role is to get you to understand, and I'll do everything I can to get you to understand. And there you go. Hook, line, and sinker, you just took the big one. You are on your way to being their victim. Here's some of the traps. I don't understand why you do those things. Right away, you're in the trap if you try to explain it. How could you do such a thing? I've never heard of such a thing. How could someone with your brains and your background do such a thing? Now it's like adding a little bit of insult to it. I'm not only shocked and scandalized, but disappointed because you, of all people, I'm stumped. You just have me perplexed. That's a great one. And now you've got to unperplex them, and you're going to be a victim as soon as you play that game. Please go over it one more time so I'll understand it. This is a very favorite. We've already been over it 642 times, but one more time and I'll get it. And that one more time, you're going to become their victim. If only you knew how I'm suffering. Now we add guilt to it, all right? You don't understand me, and I'm suffering because I don't understand you. I can't believe you're going to do that now. Not now, not when, and you can fill in the blank, all right? And this is like, I don't understand how you could possibly be going to do something like that. Now, you're going to go out jogging now when all of the family is here? You're supposed to stay around and get fat like the rest of them or whatever. And you just simply teach them that you are running your life and this is what I'm going to do. And you can lean over and give them a big kiss and say, yeah, you'll get over it or whatever. But you don't, whatever you do, stop to explain why you're going jogging now because you'll never get your jogging in if you do. Let's look at a few strategies here on how to avoid this I don't understand game and being quietly effective. Stop explaining yourself whenever you realize that you resent doing so. The minute you realize that you are now in a defensive posture of explaining yourself because someone doesn't understand in any way, stop instantly right there. Feel free to explain yourself if you're doing so, but if you feel compelled to, your strings are being pulled and the demands of others are controlling your life. Stop telling yourself that you are responsible for making people understand you. That's the game. They don't understand, and that's how they get you to be what they want you to be. Don't feel that you have a need to get them to understand. If they don't get it, they don't get it, and they probably aren't going to get it. There's a lot of people who don't get a lot of the things that I do in my life. My children don't understand a lot of the things I do. They don't understand why I meditate. I meditate every morning. A lot of people think that's really silly. But I don't care if they think it's silly, and I don't have to get them to understand what I get out of it. It is my way of going within and discovering a higher part of myself, and I go there. And now I have taught all of the people in my life that that's the way it's going to be. And when a stranger comes along or a family member who isn't around and they think it's absurd that I'm going to go meditating when everybody else is going off to breakfast, then I know I've got one more person who is trying to victimize me and get me to not do something that I want to do, and I just simply don't go that way. One of the great questions to ask when people are doing this to you is to ask the question, do you think you could ever understand? I mean, if I explained it in a language or in words that you really got, do you think you would still understand? Or are you just simply stuck in not understanding? And maybe you can know that the greatest understanding you can have is that you don't understand, and that's okay. Try not to allow yourself to be seduced into arguments. One of the best ways to do that is to just use the sentence, the word you. You want me to argue right now, and I really just don't want to. I don't really feel like I need to explain myself. And that's enough. Don't get yourself seduced into it. And learn to accept that other people are going to label you in a certain way. Other people are going to think you're weird. Others are going to think you're freaky and strange. And that's okay. There's a lot of people out there who think that about me. And it's fine. That's just their attitude. That's their belief. And I have no interest or need to get them to understand me. I just want them to be leaving me alone. I want them to stand out of my light, if you will, and not keep me from doing the things that are important for me to do. And whether you understand me or not is really of very little consequence. And that's the whole message of this section, is to know that people are going to try all of their might with I don't understand and all of the little substations of I don't understand to get you to be their victim and do things the way they want you to. Don't buy into it, and you'll find yourself not explaining yourself anymore. All right, let's take a look at a few more of the ways that people are victimized. Keep in mind as we go through these, this one sentence. You get treated in life the way you teach people to treat you. You get treated in life the way you teach people to treat you. If you find yourself being treated in a way that you resent or that turns you into a victim, ask yourself the question, what have I done to teach this person that this is something I'm willing to tolerate? What did I do the very first time somebody raised their voice to me or talked disrespectfully to me? What did I do when one of my children disobeyed me and now they do it all the time? How did I teach them that I'm willing to put up with this? No blame, no fault, no self-reproachment, just an understanding that you have taught these people what you're willing to accept. Once you take responsibility for it, then you can do something to change it. If you're just blaming them, then you're waiting for them to change in order for your problems to go away. And that's like if you drop your key inside the house and you look outside in the street for it. I mean, why would you look outside when the solution is inside? If you dropped it inside, you got to find it inside. And what you have to learn to do is develop an inner candle flame that never flickers, though the worst goes before you. You must know that all of the problems, all the difficulties, all the victimization that you may feel in your life, all of the strings that are being pulled by somebody else, are really things that you have allowed up until now. And now you make a recommitment to your own excellence or your own non-victim status, if you will. So you want to teach other people how you want to be treated. You teach them with behavior, not with words. You become very aware of when they are trying to victimize and control you, and you put a stop to it. One of the great ways that people do this is by judging rather than accepting things for what they are. There are a great many things in the world that we talk about as if they were real, but they are just only judgments. You know, the only difference between a flower and a weed is a judgment, and that's true of people as well. Here's some things that don't exist in the world. Disasters, luck, a dumb bird, a normal attitude, a guarantee, a dreadful dress, a gorgeous hairdo, terrible language, a nice lady, an awful sight, a good boy, a stupid person. These are all judgments, and you have to learn the difference between judging and what is real. Some of the categories of where people dichotomize and judge are good and bad. They try to put the whole world into what is good and what is bad based upon some perception I have. And those things that don't fit into it the way I think they ought to be are bad, and all the things that I agree with are good. And so you find yourself going through your whole life running into half of the people or more who are doing things in a different way than you do and judging them all to be bad and therefore being their victim because they now own your emotional strings. Remember, being a victim isn't necessarily a physical thing. In fact, that's very seldom the thing because we have laws to protect each other from being physically abused by each other. It isn't as if somebody's putting you into a jail, into a cell. It is the victimization is what you experience in your mind and in your emotions. And this comes from judging, from categorizing, from compartmentalizing people and putting them into the compartments. And then when they don't fit with the behavior that you think they should exhibit, you find yourself upset and worked up and angry and hurt. Good and bad and right and wrong and beautiful and ugly. There's no beautiful people in the world. There's no ugly people in the world. People are just the way they are. They look exactly the way they do, the way they're supposed to look. They're part of the perfect intelligence that is in all things in the universe, that invisible intelligence that is within all of us. But if you categorize people that way, then you are finding yourself potentially a victim. It's really important to develop a quiet mind when it comes to... when it comes to all of this. A quiet mind is a mind that is at peace, a mind that doesn't judge. One of the things you learn about judgment is that you do not define anybody else with your judgments. You only define yourself as someone who needs to judge. Just because you label somebody else to be something, obnoxious or nasty or hurtful, doesn't mean that that's what they are. That's just your judgment, and that's your definition of yourself as someone who needs to judge. People are not defined by your judgments. People are defined by their own thoughts and their own actions that are subsequent to those thoughts. So learning not to judge and unclogging your mind, if you will, of judgments and negativity and quieting your mind. It's like if you could spend an hour a day in meditation. The great French philosopher and scientist Pascal said that all of man's troubles stem from his inability to sit quietly in a room alone. You sit quietly in a room alone and go within and discover that higher consciousness, whatever you want to call it, whether you call it God or soul or spirit or Louise, it doesn't make any difference what you label it. If you go within and discover that and spend time each day inside of yourself, just peacefully being there and asking the questions, how may I serve and what is my purpose and what can I do to make this life a better one, and how can I serve people rather than be victimized by them or victimizing anybody else, you find that developing that kind of a quiet, peaceful, serene mind is something that will allow you to process the whole world in a more peaceful way. And when you get to that point where you are aligning yourself spiritually or you are aligning yourself with the invisible part of your humanity, the part that defies form, that doesn't begin and doesn't end, when you align yourself there, and that becomes your first priority, you start noticing that you don't get victimized as much. I've really noticed that as I've gotten myself on a higher spiritual path and a more peaceful path for myself and more at ease with myself, that I've begun to take much better care of my body, that I notice that when I don't expect people to be abusive towards me, that I hardly ever see it anymore. It's really rare that I see it. I know that when I get in the car and I have a 17-mile ride to go to my home from my office, and there's a lot of traffic lights and there's a lot of traffic and a lot of slow drivers and so on, I know that when I visualize in advance in my mind that this is going to be a very pleasant experience, and I see myself, if somebody's cutting me off in advance, that I see myself not allowing myself to be upset and depressed by that. I see myself going through that whole process of driving all the way home in advance. This is before I've even opened the car. And I sort of play it out in my mind. And then I get in and I just allow that, I allow the physical now to follow the thought that I just had, the visualization that I just had. And sure enough, somebody will get in there and cut me off or drive slowly or whatever. And for me, it's like I just see them as part of the perfection of it all. They're exactly where they're supposed to be at that moment. I'm no longer a victim. I have aligned myself first with my mind, knowing that I can create in my mind what I want, and then not allowing myself to be victimized when those things occur. And as I do that, I go through my life, I find that as I am more peaceful and I send out more harmony and more love and more forgiveness and more kindness and more of all the things I've been talking about on this tape, if you send that out more, that's what you get back. If you send out hostility and pain and suffering and anger and wanting to make other people wrong and wanting to prove yourself all the time, if you send out that kind of energy from yourself, that's exactly what you're going to get back. Send out love, you'll get back love. Send out anger and impatience, and that's what you'll get. Pulling your own strings truly is about looking within and knowing that no one can make you a victim without your consent. No one.